everyone. I'll be reading from 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verses 1 to 19. Josiah celebrated the Passover in Jerusalem on the 14th day of the first month. He gave the priests detailed instructions and encouraged them in the work of leading worship in the temple. He also told the Levites, who were in charge of teaching and guiding Israel in all matters of worship, place the sacred chest in the temple that Solomon, son of David, built. Organize yourselves by families for your respective responsibilities, following the instructions left by David, king of Israel, and Solomon, his son. Take your place in the sanctuary, a team of Levites for every grouping of your fellow citizens. Your job is to kill the Passover lambs, then consecrate yourselves and prepare the lambs so that everyone will be able to keep the Passover exactly as God commanded through Moses. Josiah personally donated 30,000 sheep, lambs and goats, and 3,000 bulls. Everything needed for the Passover celebration was there. His officials also pitched in on behalf of the people, including the priests and the Levites. Preparations were complete for the service of worship. They killed the Passover lambs, and while the priests sprinkled the blood from the lambs, the Levites skinned them out. Then they set aside the whole burnt offering for presentation to the family groupings of the people so that each group could offer it to God following the instructions in the book of Moses. After the people had eaten the holy meal, the Levites served themselves and the Aaronite priests. The priests were busy late into the night making the offerings at the altar. The Asaph singers were all in their places, following the instructions of David. The security guards were on duty at each gate. The Levites also served them because they couldn't leave their posts. Everything went without a hitch in the worship of God that day as they celebrated the Passover and the offering of the whole burnt offering on the altar of God. It went just as Josiah had ordered. The Israelites celebrated the Passover, also known as the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for 7 days. The Passover hadn't been celebrated like this since the days of Samuel the prophet. None of the kings had done it, but Josiah, the priests, the Levites, all Judah and Israel who were there that week, plus the citizens of Jerusalem, they did it.
Great, thank you. So, Josiah this week. Another reformer, someone who puts things right, sorts out stuff that was wrong. Now, if you've been paying attention in the last few weeks, you would have noticed that we've had a bit of a ping-pong effect, a bad king one week that Liz gets to preach on, and then a good king who starts to put things right that someone else gets to preach on. Sorry, Liz, it wasn't intentional. It's just the way it panned out. So we've had disastrous kings like Ahaz and Manasseh, and then we've had reforming kings like Hezekiah and this week Josiah, calling people back to God. Now, both Hezekiah and Josiah used the Passover feast, the Passover celebration, to help people get back right with God again. And to understand that, we need to get in our time machines and travel back 700 years previous to the time of Josiah, back to the time of Moses. Because back in that day with Moses, the people were in Egypt in slavery. And the Pharaoh of the time was a tyrant. And he kept this whole racial population in slavery and subdued. And Moses was anointed by God to confront Pharaoh, but more specifically, to confront the powers represented in Pharaoh that were keeping the whole people in slavery, confront the powers so that they could be liberated, which would be a forming experience for them. Now, this power encounter was brutal. It involved God sending plagues, plague after plague of different forms. If you've ever read it in Exodus, there's stories of the different plagues, the gnats and the frogs and all that stuff. And it leads to a climax of the death of the firstborn sons. Across the lands, the firstborn sons of the families, including Pharaoh's firstborn son, would die. Now, what's the significance of that? Well, in that culture, the firstborn son for a family was everything. It represented your succession. It represented your continuation, your life going on to the next generation. So to lose your firstborn son would be like losing everything. Sure, you might have other sons and daughters, but it felt like you were losing everything. You were losing that succession. So you see, God was making a statement to Pharaoh that if you continue in this tyrannical way, your succession will be cut off. But while there was going to be death across the lands, not every firstborn son would die. You see, God instructed the families of his people to have in their own homes a special feast. A feast involving taking a lamb and killing it and skinning it and cooking it. The Passover lamb. And to eat it that night. Now, the feast was actually to be quite theatrical. They were supposed to eat it in a hurry. They were supposed to eat it with their cloak on, all done up, ready to move out. And it also involved some peculiarities. They were to take some of the blood from the lamb that they've killed and daub it on their doorframe. For that night, God would see the individual houses that had the blood daubed on the door frames. And for those houses, God would pass over those houses and not kill the firstborn son of those households. So all the families that participated in this feast would have God's protection. And so their firstborn son wouldn't die. They would have succession. They would be liberated to leave the past behind and discover a life of worship that God was calling them into. So back to Josiah and Hezekiah. That's why they used several hundred years later the Passover celebration to call people back to God, because they were saying, look, let's do this special meal and remind us of our roots, where we have come from, who we are. We are the people that God liberated. We are the people that God protected and passed over and enabled us to come out from slavery into freedom with God himself, reminding them of their roots. That special meal was a defining meal, a meal that defined them and formed them as a people, getting back to who they were. And Josiah, he did it in style. If you read the actual text, and I asked Izzy to read a kind of abridged version, but if you read the actual text and count up the number of lambs that are mentioned, it's well over 30,000, I think it's actually over 35,000 lambs were involved in this mass communal celebration. That's why I've called the message this morning Passover on steroids, because he did it in such style. It was twice the number of animals that were used by Hezekiah a few years before. And I Googled the number of sheep in New Zealand. It's 0.1% of all the sheep in New Zealand today were used in this Passover celebration, a Passover on steroids. But there was still a problem. I mean, we all know that we can go to a big event. with a big crowd and a big stage and sound system and lights and all that good stuff. We all know that we can have a great communal experience with all the other people who pile into that event. Maybe a spiritual experience along with the crowds. But then we can go back home and return to everyday life as if nothing has changed. We know this. We've probably done this, probably many, many times for ourselves. So read on from chapter 35. And you'll see that Josiah himself doesn't keep up this clear following of God. And after Josiah, we're back to another disastrous king. Okay, Liz, I won't ask you to preach on that one. Right? Another disastrous king. And then the people are taken by a foreign power, forcibly deported and taken into exile. In other words, symbolically away from God's presence in Jerusalem and as if back in slavery. Back to square one, all over again. Mercifully, God's time limits this desperate season to just 70 years. After the 70 years, some are able to return from the exile and return and start rebuilding the temple that has been smashed to pieces and burnt. But there's a sense that even with that rebuilding and reforming that does happen, there's a sense that things are never quite restored, that they've never quite got things back. And that sense that it's not actually properly restored goes on for hundreds of years. And yet through those years, there are different people of God who say, but a bigger restoration by God is coming. So now fast forward from the time of Josiah, 600 years to the time of Jesus. Jesus, God's son. Jesus, God's firstborn son, only son, is born. He grows. He starts ministering. Now, there's another chap called John the Baptist who is one of these people of God who's been giving the message of a bigger restoration to come. But he has the privilege of actually living in the time of Jesus. And he's been telling people, get yourselves ready. Get your act together. Get yourselves clean because the liberation of God is coming. And then there comes the day when he sets eyes on Jesus for the first time. He sees him walking over there. And he calls out something really interesting. He says, look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. The Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. Well, we know that Jesus demonstrates his kingdom. He liberates people. He sets people free. He heals people. He tells people wisdom that is way beyond anything that people have heard before. But all that is good, but triggers another power encounter. And this power encounter will be on a cosmic scale. At ground level, at street level, it's the authorities and the religious people of the day can't hack this message of liberation that Jesus is bringing. And so they conspire to have him arrested. Jesus knows this and gets to the point where he is going to sit down with his followers for what he knows will be his last meal. That meal is a special celebration. It happens to be the Jewish Passover meal. So, in that day and age, they celebrate it either in family groups or maybe a few clusters of families come together. Jesus celebrates it with his closest followers. And he gets them to organize this meal to make sure that there is some roasted lamb. But also the other things that go with a meal, they would have bitter herbs, they would have some bread, they would have some wine. And he sits down with them and he does something very, very interesting. He seems to make the meal his own. He seems to make the meal about himself. And in that meal, he takes the bread, does the standard thing of breaking it and giving thanks, and then says to those people there, "Take this as my body given for you." And then with the wine, the common cup that will be shared around, he says, "Take this as my blood shed for you." The Passover lamb. Well, within hours, he is arrested, and as we're going to play out and reflect on and think on this Friday, he is executed on a Roman cross. The firstborn Son of God is now dead. The succession, the hopes and the dreams are laid in a tomb. Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. Well, plot spoiler, looking ahead to next Sunday, he does not stay dead. As he himself promised, within 3 days he is alive again and seen as alive by various people. You see, God has confronted the powers of death by allowing his Son to go through death and show that there is life, show that there is liberation, show that there is purpose for his people, that death and decay cannot block, because God enables it to come. This is a purpose that can form a people, a purpose that can be life-changing, a purpose that can last. You see, for all who put their life and faith and trust in Jesus, the curse of death and decay passes over them and they live. And they live eternally. So Hezekiah, reforming king, had a great Passover celebration, but it did not last for the people. Josiah, after him, had an even greater Passover celebration, 30, 35,000 lambs, but it did not last. But what about us in following Jesus? Do we do a great celebration and have an incredible time together, but then it doesn't last? Or do we learn what it means to live a transformed life with his resurrection life brought into the now, where we see change in ourselves, and because this kind of stuff of God can never just be contained, we see change in ourselves and in change in people around us with the resurrection life and power of God. So to put it another way, a question will appear on the screen, please, Ollie. How does the death and resurrection of Jesus that we will think about this week, how does it burn in your hearts for change in you and those around you? And the challenge for each of us is to establish regular rhythms and habits, calling on God for change in those around you. Because this stuff was never supposed to be contained. You see, me in my crafty old age, as I get on a year older, I'm not looking anymore for big events on steroids. But I am looking for depth of change. Depth of change in our lives, living out that change and living out that change so that it influences people around. And that's why as church members, when we have our meeting at the end of April, we will be looking again at whole life discipleship, following Jesus with every fabric of our being and every aspect of our life, and thinking about what that means, between us and God, what that means with us and each other, our fellow brothers and sisters in the church, and what that means with us and those we are able to influence and chat to and lead and point towards Christ. Lives following him with a daily transformation, with a succession, with a fulfillment, with a purpose, reaching out with the fire of God in our soul. I'm going to invite the